We're back in the Gospel of Mark today after we have spent, I can't remember how many weeks in John, but it was 5 or 6 weeks, I think. And just a reminder, Mark is the Gospel that is action-packed and fast-paced. This is also the last Sunday that we will be preaching out of the lectionary text that is not narrative. We're going to experiment with having a year in a narrative lectionary where we will be looking at the big story of God, the big picture of how God relates to us as humankind. Ryan has encouraged us as we have moved through these last weeks since Pentecost to ask the question, what impact would this text have on our church? And this is certainly a passage today that potentially could have lots of impact. Now, this passage is also a passage that is full of details. And those are details that I could have been caught up in, or one could be caught up in. So I realized I could have preached to you on kosher law and all of the issues around clean and unclean. I am not doing that. I could have preached on the care of parents and our responsibilities towards our parents, but I'm also not doing that. I could have preached on the Ten Commandments, because the list of things that come out of the heart that are in verses 21 and 23 are actually found in the Ten Commandments, but I'm also not going to do that. I could have preached on the Pharisees and the scribes and how different we are, or how similar we are to them, but I'm not going to do that either. What I think is important in this passage is to actually to look at the bigger issues, because I believe that the deepest challenge is to be found in these bigger issues. Now, the challenge that Jesus lays out to both his disciples and all the people around him, notice I said all the people around him, not just the Pharisees and the scribes, but all of the crowd around him, which in our context would include all of us. The challenge he lays out for us is that God's people were neglecting the core of the gospel, the core of the good news, which in my mind is love, justice, mercy, and compassion, because they were consumed with getting tradition or ritual right. And you'll notice if you look in this passage later on that in verses 3 and 5 it talks about the tradition of the elders, and in verse 8 it talks about human tradition. And it made me think of that old movie. What's that old movie where he sings about tradition? Fiddler on the Roof. You can tell I've watched it a long time ago. Tradition. They were gripped by tradition instead of the heart of the gospel. Now, these were traditions that had been built up over the centuries, and they had been added to. And it's not that they were unimportant, and it's not that they were bad, but what had happened was they had decided that the following of these traditions was what made one righteous, what made one right or pure or close to God or obedient or clean. These traditions, as I said, were not bad in and of themselves, but they had taken precedence over what I would call the core of the gospel. Everybody's purity and standing before God was dependent on how they followed these traditions. What do I mean by that? Well, as I was looking at this passage, I thought back over my years of being around other Christians, and I thought of three old examples. When I was first working with InterVarsity, I remember cleaning out the files one day, and I found a letter from a church in Edmonton that will remain nameless that said that they had heard that InterVarsity had had a square dance on campus, and therefore they were cutting off their support to InterVarsity because they believed that it was sinful to dance. I remember when I was first teaching, and I was quite a new Christian, I was teaching in Calgary, and I used to occasionally go to Bethany Chapel because I had good friends who went there. And one of my good friends' mothers said to us as we came into church one day, We have doilies if you would like to put them on your head. And I looked at her and thought, doilies on my head? Well, they believed that one of their rituals and their traditions was that all women should have head covering when you come to worship. Needless to say, I ignored the advice. Now, the last example was a colleague of mine, and Zibby grew up in brethren circles as well, and her grandmother had been blind for years, and she finally was able to have surgery so that she could see. And Zibby was actually quite nervous about going to see her grandmother because in brethren circles at that time, it was tradition that women would never have pierced ears. And Zibby had pierced ears. And wouldn't you know it, the first thing her grandmother said to her was, "Your ears are pierced." So those are some examples of ritual, tradition, that we believe in holding to them, somehow we are pure. Somehow we are righteous before God. Somehow we are clean before God. And Jesus' response is interesting. He says to the crowd, "You hypocrites." And then he quotes from Isaiah, "These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching human precepts or human traditions as doctrines." I found a quote from Barbara Brown Taylor, who's one of my favorite writers, and it doesn't exactly relate, but it catches what I would like us to think about, the core of what the gospel is versus ritual or tradition. "In facing his death, Jesus knows that he lays down his life for us. And before this happens, he gives his disciples and us a new commandment, that they would love one another as he is about to love them. It is his last will and testament, and it will become their community charter and should be our community charter. Everything else he has taught is important, but this is crucial. Their love for one another will be their one true mark that they believe in him. Not their knowledge, not their piety, not their good works, but their death-defying love." And what we see in Mark 7 is that mercy and love has been overcome by church tradition. Now, obviously, this forces us to ask ourselves the question at First Baptist Church Edmonton, what rituals or tradition are we holding on to that actually have taken over from our love of each other and the core of the gospel, that we would be people of love, mercy, and compassion? And I would suggest that that's a good question for each of us to ask. And I'm not sure exactly what the answer is, but I do know that occasionally I have been known to feel vastly superior as I worship with other people and congregations that we actually sing hymns and have an organ and a piano. And we don't have a worship band and we don't put our music up on an overhead. Now that, my friends, is a tradition, not something that is actually about the core of the gospel. Do we hang on to the fact that we wear robes, even in the summer when it's 35 degrees? Do we hang on to how we believe it is appropriate to baptize people? Do we hang on to something around what it is appropriate to wear? I actually don't think that's an issue here, because we're very comfortable with people wearing whatever they want to. Do we hang on to a tradition around who should or should not take communion? I don't know what it would be for you or for us as a community of faith, but I do know it's important to look at that question. Perhaps, I thought, it's in more general areas. Are there people that we believe are impure or unclean or contaminated and, in my mind, far from God? The wealthy, the poor, the politically conservative, or the politically liberal, street people, the mentally unwell, Mark, as a gospel, has clearly shown already by the time we get to this passage that Jesus rejects traditional purity laws. After all, by the time we get here, he has touched a corpse, the little girl Tabitha, who was clearly dead, and for a Jew to touch a corpse was a majorly unclean thing to do. He has eaten with tax collectors and sinners, he has been touched by a woman who was unclean, and he has touched a leper. So Jesus has already turned on its head what we would call ritual purity laws. Jesus lived and taught that purity and righteousness, and in our language, being a good Christian, was not about avoiding certain activities, certain foods, or certain people. He moves to try and help us see that it is who we are and what we do that matters. It is in the heart or the mind and the will that things that matter come from. It is from here that purity happens, not from ritual. And he says it is from the heart that these things come from. And I would say it is also the mind and the will. And he gives us a sample list. This is not an exhaustive list. This is just a sample list. He says it is from inside of us that things like greed, slander, adultery, theft, deceit, envy, pride, folly, and murder come from. This is what really matters. And it's not that the heart is all bad, because certainly from our hearts come good as well as evil. We are such a mixed bag. We are so capable of good, and we are so capable of not good or evil. Jesus, as one writer put it, in confronting traditions and ritual through both his deeds and his words, blows apart the safe religious life of his listeners. Let me say that again. Jesus, in confronting tradition and ritual through both his deeds and his words, blows apart the safe religious life of his listeners, and he would do the same to us. Purity traditions and laws developed a system where some were clean and thus closer to God, and others who were unclean were thus shunned and were actually treated as if they must be avoided so they would not contaminate us. And these laws became a way to exclude people rather than to include. And if nothing else, if you wonder about this, if you wonder whether Jesus was that person who included, go home and just read quickly one of the Gospels. Read Mark, it's short. And look at the people that Jesus related to. He included, he did not exclude. Jesus ignored, disregarded, and actively demonstrated that these distinctives of ritual purity, as they were used as a measure of spiritual status, were wrong. The new community he consistently demonstrated was about compassion and inclusion, rather than outward ritual. One of the commentators I read put it this way: no outcasts were cast out far enough for Jesus to shun them. No outcasts were cast out far enough for Jesus to shun them. And this commentator went on to say, Jesus deliberately moved from the saying in Leviticus 19, which says, "Be holy for as I am holy," to Luke 6, where he said, "Be merciful as your Father in heaven is merciful." Do I see simple answers to this for here and how this might work? Well, the answer is yes and no. One simple observation is that if we are going to hang on to ritual and how that makes us pure and right before God, it's based on a completely false assumption. Because the bottom line is, we all sin. We all fall short of what God longs for us. So it doesn't make any sense to me that we would somehow feel that we are superior, that we are right, that we are close to God, and that there are others who are further away. We are all far away from God. The miracle is that he bridges that gap and draws all close to him. There are hard questions in here. One of them is, how can we embrace holiness and compassion together instead of one or the other? I actually don't have an answer for that today, but it's a question worth wrestling with. Another good question for each of us to ask is, who am I tempted to exclude? Ryan jokingly suggested early this week that I preach on the Song of Solomon, which is one of the lectionary readings, and I looked at him and laughed and said, no way. However, I caught myself, having read that passage from chapter 2, with this love song from God lurking in the back of my brain. And I decided that in looking at what Jesus challenges us with today, that he does not come to us wanting to beat us over the head with how we have failed in this. He actually comes to us longing to love us, to love others. That this is like a love song, that he is wooing us as a lover would woo another. And that is the longing of God's heart, that he could love us towards loving others. Placker, one of my favorite commentators, says that we would respond to Jesus' invitation to let our concern to be proper, righteous, clean, pure, and respectable be burned away so that there are none we would hesitate to identify with. That we would allow God to renew our hearts, and that in having renewed hearts, we would be able to love. That First Baptist Church would become a community shaped not by the ethos and politics of purity, but by the ethos and politics of compassion. And I have always believed that if we do this, we are in marvelous company, because we become like Jesus, because that is exactly what he did. So we have good company, and I can't think of anyone better to be said that I am like than to be like Jesus. Amen.